Hello, America, and all of our listeners all over the world. You're listening to yet another exciting edition of Let's Weekend. I'm your host, Mr. Brandon Perkins. Joining me, as always, is Chris Sologi and Teresa Salmon. Say hi to the good folks, people.
Hello.
Hey.
Yeah. So this episode is for November 5th, 2022. So, yeah, it's getting to be that time of the year, folks. It's the holidays are fast approaching. And it's getting colder outside, you know, by degrees, I guess, because I live in Georgia where weather never makes any sense. So, you know, not just here on Let's Weekend, but also, you know, on Day Zero Update, we're going to be talking about, you know, the holidays coming up and all the stuff that's going to go with that. But, of course, here in the U.S., we got another big thing coming up, which is the midterms, which are going to be coming up Tuesday. And boy, I cannot wait because I am sick of all these friggin' advertisements.
Yeah, I can't watch basketball games without seeing J.D. Vance's dumb face.
Yeah, and it's especially bad if you use Fire Stick like, you know, we do, because it's pretty much like literally every single advertisement on TV. It's almost completely choked out everything else. And I have a feeling that come Monday, it's probably going to be the only advertisements we're going to get that entire day. Because, and it's not just that either, it's also the mailers too. Like, I don't know how it is like outside of the U.S., but here when elections come around, we get absolutely flooded with all kinds of mailers from all sorts of shady political action committees with like really sketchy names. And usually it's like the same org, but with like four different names, and they all send you the same stuff about the same candidate. So you're basically getting your mailbox absolutely stuffed with junk mail. But,
well, that's the same all year round. It's just different bullshit.
Yeah, pretty much. Unfortunately, come Tuesday, that will be largely no longer a problem. So, in fact, I wouldn't be surprised if, like, once noon Tuesday, you know, like, I wouldn't even be surprised if noon rolled around and suddenly Tuesday and then all of the adverts just suddenly disappeared. But that's wishful thinking on my part, I'm afraid. But anyway, so what do we got this week to talk about? Well, probably one of the big stories this week is that the husband of our Speaker of the House recently was the victim of an attempted murder. We've also got more anti-Semites doing stupid shit and paying the price for it. We have something about that whole shortage of catalytic converters that's been happening, and we think we might have found one of the reasons why. Elon Musk is now officially the owner of Twitter, and it's just going great. do you guys remember that whole thing about, you know how like every year when Halloween comes around, there's always some new scare about people putting something in the candy? Well, this time we had something kind of reminiscent of that, but just as like that other stuff, it turned out to be complete and total bullshit. And, of course, we have a bunch of entertainment stuff to talk about. And, we'll have all that and more on this week's episode of Let's Weekend. But start us off, as we always do. We'll be talking a little bit about all the things we've been doing leading up to today. And, as always, we'll start with Chris. Chris, what have you been doing this week?
Dealing with unnatural temperatures.
Oh, really?
It was in the mid-70s today.
Yeah, for Cleveland, that sounds pretty unnatural.
Yeah, we're used to cooler weather this time of year.
Mm-hmm.
Considering it's supposed to be winter pretty soon.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're selling us Christmas shit, and there's no sign that anything is going to be cold by Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
At this rate, though, I think we're supposed to get some rain. It's going to cool off a little bit, but it still looks like it's going to hang around the 50s and 60s here, at least.
Yeah.
Not be as warm, but we're supposed to be in pants mode now for the rest of the year.
Mm-hmm.
It hasn't happened yet. So that's the... Then it always annoys me because people are like, oh, it's so nice. It's like, no, it's not. It's supposed to be shit. That's Ohio. Yeah. That's the Great Lakes. Weather at this time of year. Teresa can back me up on this.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's the unfortunate news. But yeah, that's been watching some stuff. Manifest, season 4, part 1, came out yesterday. Managed to get through all of it. Still like it a lot. It's like they've had about like 2 years pass since the last season, as they're something like 18 months to the what they call their death date. Because I believe they landed 5.5 years after they were supposed to have landed originally, and so 5.5 years later, they potentially all die. Whoever didn't die of other causes or whatever before then, supposed to die, and so you know they're trying to figure out like how do we prevent this? What are the callings? All this stuff solve a lot of these problems, and they've solved some of them, but still, it's. The stakes keep getting bigger and bigger, and it's like, now they're dealing with little more religious iconography of things like, hey, the angel of death being upon them. And that's all great. And all the shit that comes with that. So yeah, that's fun. I don't know when they're going to have the rest of it, the second part that's going to be the finale, but I'm looking forward to that. So you also been watching more One Piece.
Oh, yeah. Got
back into that. Finished up the Skypiea arc, where he beats God, or a God of sorts. And they start just saying, like, hey, what? It's been serious for a while. Let's get goofy. And so they get out of the Sky Island and land directly in the middle of a marine base. And have to scramble and sort of figure out a way to get out of there. So that was a whole fun bit. Let's see. After that, they get into this weird competition with another pirate crew called the Davy Games, where they have essentially it's like a betting situation where you're betting members of your crew against the other team. And Luffy obviously doesn't understand anything he's doing. And agrees to it initially, and then they fight to get everybody back, and then agrees to do it again because he's not thinking. And so then that whole thing ends pretty well. Against the pirate captain is just one of the oddest people I've seen so far. He was very thin-skinned, so one of their strategies on counteracting his bullshit in one of the games is literally just yelling compliments and insults back and forth to just make him ineffective because he takes all that stuff super personally and gets bummed out every time. So, you know, the sort of goofy stuff that you expect out of One Piece. But yeah, that's been a lot of fun. I'm in the next arc where some weird shit's happening. So that's fun. But yeah, for games, I've been playing Shatter Remastered Deluxe, which is the long-awaited remaster of Shatter, the sort of Arkanoid clone that plays around with the formula a good bit with the ability to suck and blow with your paddle, which allows you to pull in shards that increases your multiplier for the score stuff while... potentially also bringing in blocks that get unseated from their position in the board, kind of stuff that can interfere with your ability to catch the ball and hit it back, all that kind of stuff. And they play around with different kind of shapes of the stages and all that kind of stuff. That is just kind of changing things up every single world that you play through. So a lot of fun still. $10 It's on everything. Worth checking out. That's the other thing. American Truck Sim. They got a Halloween event going on that ends tomorrow, so I'm working my way through that. Gonna make 13 deliveries of these hauls of Halloween treats.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm working on that. That's been fun still.
Mm-hmm.
And play more Rocket League. Just having fun with that. So not really too much more to say on that. So yeah, that's pretty much it for me. So how about you, Teresa?
Yeah, Teresa, what about you?
Well, I've been playing Final Fantasy 14 as per usual.
As your want, yes.
Right. But not as much as usual, though. I was also playing this really weird point-and-click game called Procession to Calvary.
Oh, yeah, I played that one, too.
Yeah, that was kind of fun. Music was, some of it was a little loud, and some of it wasn't so loud, but I think that that's more the nature of classical music.
Yeah, so. And also it's for kind of for comedic effect as well.
Yeah. So that one's definitely interesting, and it was on sale on Steam. I don't know if it still is. Mm. But we've been watching Letterkenny Season 10. We're about halfway through with that. Mm. All caught up on Andor. Whew. That one's like a love letter to deep lore fans.
Mm-hmm.
Just it keeps getting more amazing, which I didn't think it was going to. Trying to get caught up on Harley Quinn. Not even close, but still fun to get there. And we've been baking things while being baked because it's fall and it's time to bake.
Yeah.
Even though, yeah, it was close to 70, like Chris said, and it's just stupid.
Mm-hmm.
So that's about it. What about you?
Well, first and foremost, I finished both Cyberpunk 2077 and Cyberpunk Edgerunners. And, because after I finished Cyberpunk Edgerunners, like, I have to go back into this game and I have to murder Adam Smasher with my bare hands. And avenge what he did to David and Rebecca, so now that that's gone, I'm also playing and actually finished recently Signalis, which is a indie sort of polygonal based old school survival horror game, kind of like Resident Evil, but instead of like, you know, in a bunch of weird camera angles on, you know, pre-made backgrounds, it's all sort of from the top down, but like from an angle. And it's had some of the best world building I've seen in a game in a long time. And just because of how much it suggests, but it also gets really, really trippy, by the time you get to part three, because basically time and space starts completely breaking down and it starts getting hard to tell what's real and what's just, you know, delusion at that point. But yes, I do highly, highly recommend playing that game, because it is a fantastic game with a fantastic story, and some pretty fiendishly difficult puzzles as well. But it was fun. And so now much of my gaming is being done through Persona 5 Royal, which of course is the sort of updated, perfected version of Persona 5. And I've, you know, coming back and playing that game, I've come to realize how much of that game I actually had forgotten about. Because there were parts in that game where I was like, oh, this must have been something that they added in, you know, as this part of the game for the new version. And it's like, no, actually, it's was in the first. It's just you probably didn't pursue it that much. But it is definitely, even though like the original Persona 5 is almost like in and of itself almost perfection, they somehow managed to take it and make it even better. There's a bunch of new cutscenes. Some of the voiceovers were redone so they sound crisper. They also added like a fast forward button so that, you know, if you're having to grind, you can just have them kind of happen automatically without, you know, constantly having to go through it yourself. But there's also stuff like, there's a couple of actually in there that they decide to add in. And they start showing up pretty much almost immediately. After you finish the first palace and that sort of first thing, there's a new guy who shows up named Takuda Maruki, who's like a professional counselor who the school decides to hire after, you know, the fact that they discover that their, you know, the guy who was their PE teacher had been physically abusing and sexually harassing a bunch of the students in the school. But it's it's like really, I'm remembering why I loved playing this game the first time around. Let's see. Other than that, nothing terribly much. Still going through my ex-Japan obsession and all the bands that are connected to it. And like I said, midterms. They're Tuesday. So if you haven't early voted yet, you know what you need to do. do you guys want to add anything else before we move on?
Nope.
Mm-mm. All righty then. It is now time for everybody's favorite part of the show, Brandon's Random Factoid. And, you know, sometimes we talk about stuff that, you know, is really obscure and it kind of surprises you. And then on occasion we talk about stuff that everybody knows about, but, you know, maybe finds just a little bit of something that you previously didn't know. Today we're going to do something that me and Teresa and Chris, we all definitely know about, but probably the younger generations probably don't. And that's a little thing called Napster. All right, so.
Yeah, the music streaming platform, a legitimate one.
Yeah, the legitimate one. So, Chris, Teresa, did you guys ever use Napster back in the day?
Yeah.
Or at least try? Teresa?
Yeah. Yeah, it definitely. I used it, and it worked for me.
Yeah, and I used it too, and it also kind of worked for me. And I'll explain why, but okay, so what was Napster? Well, to talk about Napster, you basically have to kind of talk about a little bit first about the guys who started it. These were the two dudes, Sean and John Fanning. And both of these guys were really smart sort of programmers who came up with ideas, you know, trying to come up with new stuff. And eventually, you know, Sean got signed on to a company called NetGames with John and said, hey, Sean, you're a great programmer. We're going to let you go here and let you just do a bunch of programming projects that you want to your heart's content. Eventually he went to Northeastern, where he gained a nickname for his nickname, which was literally Napster. And the reason was he had kind of nappy hair, which is funny if you saw pictures of him during when he was most famous, because he got his hair really close crop shaved. But he actually, like when he was younger, looked a lot like he usually just crawled out of bed. Well, one of the projects he worked on was trying to come up with a way where you could trade MP3s. Now, MP3s are, of course, still a thing, right? And it's essentially the best way that you can trade, you know, sound files. But the thing is, there were and for the record, I need to point out, Napster wasn't the first to do this. There were other companies that would pop up around this time, like LimeWire, or what was it, Groxler, Kazaa, you know, stuff like that. But Napster ended up being the one that caught on, mostly because it was free and you could basically reproduce it very easily. And the thing about Napster is that it was probably, of all of them at the time, it was probably the most efficient. You could essentially put a sound file in there of any song you could think of, and you could trade it and download it for a fairly short amount of time. Now, keep in mind, this is right around the turn of the millennium we're talking about here. So, you know, short amount of time is kind of measured here, if you know what I mean. So eventually Fanning found potential for it and he started funding it so it could be developed. Now, when you sort of used it in its iterations, it sort of changed kind of rapidly. Once they got more professional programmers on it, it ran better. And they tried to put in a bunch of legal renewers to sort of put into place to protect the company. So, obviously, suddenly this thing starts exploding everywhere. It starts spreading. And suddenly, for the first time, you could actually listen to a song without having to actually buy the album. Now, in the modern world, in 2022, people obviously still buy albums, but it's something that you do as a way of supporting the artist because you like their work, rather than the other way around, where you had to buy the album to hear the artist work in the first place. And the record industry lost its collective shit. See, Napster basically based its entire business model on what was basically trading copyrighted works without any need to pay. And so obviously Napster started getting legal threats, including people that were, you know, selling Napster merch. And then Metallica got involved. And I think this is probably the moment where, like, Metallica had been having issues for a while up to this point, but this was probably the part where Metallica basically lost a bunch of their respect. Lars Ulrich, of all people, decided to poke his ass into this, and he started going before Congress saying, you know, Napster hijacked our music and all this other shit. And really, if anything, it showed just how out of control the music industry had become as far as, you know, lawsuits and shit. Well, here's what happened. See, even though Napster eventually had to get sold off to another company, it pretty much destroyed the album industrial complex, I guess you could call it. Because after this, we started getting stuff like iTunes. iTunes basically took this whole concept and not only legalized it, but they actually like streamlined it in a way so that it was much easier to download. Because here's the thing about stuff like Napster and LimeWire. When those things were still in their heyday, the vast majority of internet users in the United States were still using dial-up. And is anybody who's ever had to use dial-up can tell you, dial-up is slow as shit. And especially when it came to MP3 files, it was infuriatingly slow as shit. It would take half an hour to download just one song. That's not a joke. And as far as a whole album, well, you can pretty much kiss your afternoon goodbye. And keep in mind, for a lot of people, those dial-up connections were also their landlines, meaning that you could only be on the internet for a certain amount of time before you had to use the phone. But eventually, the record industry had to admit that the old ways just wasn't working anymore. And now you can basically go on YouTube and listen to pretty much any song that's ever been recorded at any time of day, and there's not shit all that they can do about it. So peer-to-peer file sharing basically killed the album industrial complex. MP3s basically were the ones that lit the fire, and iTunes is what ultimately buried it. But it was thanks to Napster that basically showed all the weak links in it, and because of them, you can now go and listen to music anytime you want, and the record companies be damned. And that has been Brandon's Random Factoid. Yeah. So yeah, that's something we definitely know about, but compare it to like younger generations now who have like instant access to music at any time and having to tell them, yeah, there was a time when, you know, you could download music online, but it took a long ass time and it could get you in legal trouble.
It might not be even the music you thought it was.
No.
Oh, because, so true.
Oh God. Yeah. They mislabel shit all the time.
Yeah. Like System of a Down's Legend of Zelda song.
Mm-hmm. But anyway, moving on from there, it is now time to move on to the show proper. And as always with the show proper, we start off with our assholes of the week. And our first asshole of the week is a Canadian piece of work named David DePoppy, who traveled down to California to the home of Nancy Pelosi, the current Speaker of the House, broke into their house in the middle of the night with a hammer and then assaulted her 80-year her elderly husband, who suffered, you know, cranial damage and had to go into surgery. And even though the guy admitted to it, the statement out, all the police say, yes, what happened, conspiracy theories just exploded everywhere immediately afterwards.
And one of the first was from current owner of Twitter, Elon Musk, sharing an article from, like, the Santa Monica Observer, a well-known place for disseminating fake news, about, I forget what that one was about. But yeah, it was like one about, oh, this guy was his gay lover, and there was a lover's quarrel, and he was in his underwear and all this.
Yeah.
And it's like, no, that wasn't true at all. You know, all these weren't true. So,
yeah,
he nearly got killed, hit with a hammer.
Mm-hmm.
Luckily, he survived. Was able to get patched up. Should be okay for the time being. But showed what conspiracy theories can do to people, because this man believed a lot of them. Went to go act as he was apparently yelling for Nancy.
Yep.
Intending to kill her.
Mm-hmm.
Luckily, she wasn't home.
No, she was not.
And yeah, but she is an important figure because she is third in line to be the president.
Yeah.
Should the president and the vice president be dispatched, she would be third in line.
Yeah.
But he is, he's got federal felony charges against him, faces two felony charges of, let's see, one count of assault of an immediate family member of a United States official with intent to retaliate against the official on account of the performance of official duties, to bring a maximum prison sentence of 30 years, and one count of attempted kidnapping of a U.S. official on account of performance of official duties, which could bring a maximum of 20 years. So that's potentially 50 years gone.
But, so he's apparently, Paul Pelosi is already back home, but he's still recovering, more or less, considering, you know, he's an old man who was hit in the head with a hammer. But, so this dude's going to go away for a long time.
And unfortunately, just continue to show the ugly side of the GOP as they gleefully dove into all those conspiracies, pushed them, claimed that, you know, something wasn't quite right here. You know, there's no way this guy was a right winger or anything like that. And it's like, who on the left would have that kind of drive to go kill Nancy Pelosi? It wasn't like there were people trying to kill her at the insurrection. And also, he's an illegal alien, according to the GOP. So there you go.
And now we got this little bit of it. So there's been this issue globally with a shortage of catalytic converters. There's been like a shortage with them, and catalytic converters are one of those things that you really need, especially if you're in a, you know, if you own a car. And now we kind of found out maybe one of the reasons, at least, why there's been such a shortage, because the United States government this week actually busted a huge theft ring of catalytic converters, and they're seeking over $500 million in forfeitures from the people responsible.
Yeah, the Justice Department arrested 21 people suspected of belonging to a theft ring that made millions of dollars from stolen catalytic converters. The car parts that have been increasingly targeted across the country for theft. A team of law enforcement agencies at the local, state, and federal levels seized hundreds of millions of dollars in assets, such as homes, bank accounts, cash, cars, and jewelry from the defendants. They're being charged with conspiracy to transport stolen catalytic converters, conspiracy to commit money laundering, and others. Yeah, so the National Network of Criminals. Yeah, charged in two different indictments in separate courts, one in California, one in Oklahoma. 15 of the defendants are accused of buying catalytic converters from local thieves, shipping them to DG Auto in New Jersey. Six people of DG Auto are accused of buying the stolen parts and decanning them to extract the powdered metals and sell them to a metal refinery. They allegedly made about $545 million from the process. Yeah, that's been, I think, the rhodium, platinum, and palladium that are some of those rare metals that are in there. Can be valued at hundreds of dollars at scrap yards. It seems like there's probably something up at that metal refinery, too. I'm sure they're looking into that kind of stuff. Yeah, there's been about a tenfold increase in theft since 2018, with more than 14,000 being stolen in 2020. Which was a convenient time when a lot of people weren't driving. So it's not even like they were at work and they went to town on their cars. So there you go.
So we got that, and now we got more of this shit, because Kyrie Irving of the Brooklyn Nets was recently suspended after he started sharing an anti-Semitic movie and then refusing to apologize during several chances after the post, because thanks, Kanye.
Yeah, and this is something that's been going on for a long time with him, not the anti-Semitic stuff, but he has been one of those free thinkers, which just means
quote unquote free thinkers.
Yeah, which is a term to mean like, oh, I can objectively like look at all of this information, a lot of its conspiracies, and you know, come to a rational, objective opinion on that stuff, and not just, you know, deny stuff for the stupid and irrational conspiracies that they are. But he, quite a while ago, when he was with the Cleveland Cavaliers, made news because he talked about having fun with things like flat earthers and the moon landing being faked and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, if you're not of, like, it's fine to question that kind of stuff, but, you know, the science is subtle on that stuff.
Yeah.
It's not like something that is an unknown, like, say, all the UFO stuff that happens. All that stuff. But oftentimes, people that get into that kind of stuff, flat earthers and moon landing, like all the stuff that seems harmless, end up going hard right into anti-Semitic stuff, fascist stuff, all that kind of stuff. As H. Bomber Guy did a whole thing on flat earthers and ended up in the weird side of Twitter in that community where, you know, there's people being very anti-Semitic, transphobic, a neo-Nazi vegan rapper who gave praise for Hitler, because of course that stuff goes with it. And you know, it's been kind of somebody that's anybody with rational beliefs and, you know, the things that have been proven around our history and all that have always had a side eye at him, especially when the pandemic happened and he very much was refusing to get vaccinated, was willing to, you know, sit out most of the season last year as a result, until, you know, that point where politicians realized they had no more capital for mandating that stuff. And said, like, well, fuck it, nobody cares anymore about public safety, and so he got to continue playing. Fast forward to this season where he's just been saying a lot of weird shit that tied into this movie that he had apparently watched, called Hebrews to Negroes Wake Up Black America. It was on Amazon, maybe Amazon Prime Video as well.
Yeah, it came out like in 2018, apparently.
Yeah, that everybody was like, oh yeah, this this is pretty stock anti-Semitism stuff.
Yeah, well, in this case, it's based around Black Hebrew stuff, which is like a very specific kind of. It's weird because there's branches of it. Not all of it is necessarily anti-Semitic in and of itself, but the kind that this movie is, you know, talking about is blatantly anti-Semitic.
And people are like, it seems pretty stock, and then some people with an eye around that stuff watched it and like, this is even worse than I thought it was going to be.
Mm-hmm.
Because it, you know, has plenty of Holocaust denialism in it. Talks about Hitler and Henry Ford. Yeah. All the greatest hits of that stuff. And all he did, essentially, posted a tweet with the link to it.
Yep.
Didn't post any context or anything that might have helped any of that stuff. But got asked after the next game in the press conference about it. And got really defensive. Seemed to believe, like, posting stuff on his Twitter and Instagram as a world-famous athlete, that it wasn't promoting it. I was like, no, that's...
not how that works, dude.
Yeah, you are a public figure. Just like anything, like, Biden were to post on his accounts would be promotion of some kind. Whether being directly paid for it or anything, and he's... got a little defensive about it.
Yeah.
So much so, like, getting combative with the writer, like, oh, you're seeking your fame, your video, your hits, and all this stuff, and refusing to own up for it. And had another chance a couple days later, talking about it again, and sort of had a chance to. Was like point blank asked, do you have anti-Semitic beliefs? And didn't really say no. Just like, very much like, that's not who I am. I'm talking about like learning the history of his people, which I believe he is half Black, half Native American. So there's obviously a lot of trauma in the history of both of those.
Yeah.
But he's also at points claimed he changed to being a Muslim. And at some point in all this, claimed he's an omnist, learns from all religions. And it's like, that just seems like a way of saying, like, you can't criticize me because I'm learning from all gods and religions and all that. So how can I be anti-Semitic if I have love for all people and whatever? It's like, no, that just seems like, you know, real defensive stuff there. Even at one point in another press conference, saying, like, denying that he has a platform, but also saying, you know, I'm only going to get stronger because I'm not alone. I have a whole army around me. And all that kind of shit. And then this statement comes out from a partnership between him, the Nets, the Brooklyn Nets that he plays for in the ADL. Sort of saying, like, you know, he was going to apologize and donate $500,000, and I think the Nets were going to put up another $500,000towards the ADL for, you know, anti-Semitism charities, whatever it was. And then had a press conference afterwards, basically, you know, taking no responsibility for what he has posted and said and all this, no apology. Really, and ADL's CEO is basically like, yeah, we're not going to accept that donation because it obviously he hasn't actually learned anything here. Which led to the team suspending him for 5 games at least. The NBA itself put out statements about this. The NBA Players Association, which he is a VP of, put out kind of a toothless statement. The NBA commissioner is Adam Silver, who is Jewish. So they didn't seem to want to get directly involved with this, but were putting statements condemning his failure to offer, you know, an actual apology and all that. And so in the wake of the suspension, he put out an actual statement being very much like a D-grade essay, you know, apology. where it's like, you technically apologize, but there's lots of weasel words in here that just, you maybe don't really believe it. But he posted, you know, some of the lines from that to all Jewish families and communities that are hurt and affected from my post. I'm deeply sorry to have caused you pain, and I apologize. I initially reacted on motion to being unjustly labeled anti-Semitic. Instead of focusing on the healing process of my Jewish brothers and sisters that were hurt from the hateful remarks made in the documentary. And so, yeah, the GM of the Brooklyn Nets called the apology a step in the right direction, but certainly not enough. And so, yeah, he's kind of in this. And then I believe since this all happened, he has lost his sponsorship from Nike. They were canceling the near release of his new shoes, Kyrie 8s, which were very popular.
Yeah.
He's very popular around the world. He grew up in Australia as well as in the U.S.
Yep.
Because his dad is Australian, his mom is Native American. So all sorts of fun stuff. And it's basically a mess of his own making.
Yep. Pretty much. But
he's, you know, very much of this same kind of path that Kanye's had and all that. And anti-Semitism is hard to fight because combating it also feeds into the conspiracy because the Jewish cabal is obviously pushing back against Kyrie because he knows too much. All that kind of shit. And it's like, that's why it's gone on for thousands of years.
It's why it's the one, it's like the pernicious prejudice that cannot die, because every time you try to fight it, it just sort of goes into this sort of vicious feedback loop where it
helps reinforce those who are lost in the sauce.
And, you know, the thing is, when it gets, and unfortunately, once it gets too serious, you know, it's no longer just fighting with words anymore. You got to bring the rifles out. But anyway, and finally, our last asshole of the week, Benjamin Netanyahu, because he is going to be returning to power after the fifth vote in Israel in 4 years, because he managed to partner up with what at one point had been considered sort of the third rail of Israeli politics, which was he teamed up with the far right.
Yeah, even as much as he was kind of a part of the far right.
Yeah, Likud is already pretty far right itself, but the guys he's partnering up with are a whole are on a whole another level.
Yeah, so this is looking to be their most right wing government ever.
Yeah,
which is definitely saying something because he has been there for a very long time.
Oh yeah,
it was like 20 years or so now at this point.
Yeah,
people managed to vote him out last time, but unfortunately, government was not formed or stable on at least.
Yeah.
And so the more left-leaning groups that were going to help turn things around, unfortunately, weren't able to form a cohesive union. And has led to this. The man who started a lot of shit coming back, who was charged with corruption. I don't know if that has progressed at all. At any point, I'm not sure if that's mentioned here at all, but that seems like that flamed out, and maybe that's because he has that kind of deep reach into the system there.
So if you're wondering what the party is he's decided to join up with, it's a little group called the Otzma Yehudit, which has six members in the Knesset, and they are an organization that follows an ideology called Kahanism. Now, what is Kahanism? Well, it references a guy by the name of Meir Kahan, who was a rabbi originally from Brooklyn, New York, who founded this hardcore terrorist organization called the Jewish Defense League, which is this basically a far-right organization that basically goes around doing things like, you know, beating up Palestinian activists or anybody they consider to be, quote, enemies of the Jewish people, including other Jews. Sometimes they end up, you know, targeting neo-Nazis, which, you know, that's good. And then they'll target Arab American politicians. That's not so good. And they have a body count. Back in 1994, a guy named Baruch Goldstein, who lived in Israel, went to the Cave of the Patriarchs and murdered 29 Muslims, some of them who were children. Kahan himself ended up being, he was assassinated in 1990 when he was assassinated by Egyptian El Sayed Nosayer. But these guys go from, you know, the sort of vaguely apartheid-esque, you know, the Palestinians should have their own land separate from the Jews that they can control themselves, and we're just kind of not going to give them a bunch of funding, to the Kahanists who think that the Palestinians are not humans and do not have the right to exist. So yeah, it's going to get kind of messy over there.
Yeah, the fun whole thing of like, they deserve land, but not the land we took from them.
No.
That'd be wrong. We'll bomb them, claiming they attacked us.
Yeah.
Repeatedly, and then just have people steal their houses and land.
Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, it's not all bad, because we do have one. That is Lula da Silva, who actually beat President Bolsonaro to win the presidency of Brazil. And it was close, but he won.
Yeah, and Bolsonaro didn't necessarily like throw a fit, at least publicly.
No.
As much as people feared. Essentially, mm-hmm. It seems like he probably threw a fit in his place.
Mm-hmm.
But told, you know, his officials to like start the transition.
Mm-hmm.
So we avoided another Trump, despite how much he seemed to be pushing for it.
Mm-hmm.
To use the military to fight back and steal the country. Maybe that'll still happen. Who knows?
Mm-hmm.
Because he will not start his term until January 1st.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's sort of thing where even during that election day, sort of the stories of the federal police blocking people from getting to the voting booths on the highways and such.
Yep.
I was like, oh, that's great. But couldn't stop them all.
Mm-hmm.
So when it swapped from Bolsonaro having a, you know, like 50 point something percent, and as it slowly ticked down as the votes came in,
mm-hmm.
then swapped to Silva being at 50.1%, it was sort of like, oh, as long as, you know, he doesn't go for an insurrection,
mm-hmm.
it seemed like the good news was coming. Then it got made official.
Mm-hmm.
Finished with 15.9% of the vote. Mm. Compared to 49.1%. I will be sworn in for a 4-year term on January 1st.
Yep.
Hopefully and, can help to repair some of the damage that Bolsonaro's been doing for the past few years.
Yeah. Especially to the Amazon. Hopefully he can get to work repairing some of the just indiscriminate destruction that area has faced under Bolsonaro's tenure. But all right, so with that out of the way, it is now time to the proper show proper. And the first thing we'll be talking about, of course, is Twitter, because Elon Musk officially owns it now, and it's just going great.
Yeah.
Paid
$44 billion to get bossed around by a user named Cat Turd.
Mm-hmm. And it's like, wow, buyers are really setting in there pretty quickly. So the first thing that came up almost immediately was he wanted to charge people to have a blue check mark next to their name. Originally, he was going to charge $20 until Stephen King, yes, that's Stephen King, came forward and said, yeah, that's really stupid. Why should I stick around for something like that? And then Elon immediately got on and was like, eh, let's haggle. What about $8?
And it's like, the price wasn't the problem.
No.
Or the cost wasn't the problem. Because he could afford that if he wanted to.
Yeah. I mean, Stephen King's like hella rich. Of course he could afford it.
Yeah, but it's the principle that the check mark is not an elitist thing. It is for verifying that people of note,
mm-hmm.
Public figures, celebrities, and whatnot, those are the real people
mm-hmm.
saying that instead of, you know, the occasional periods where somebody mm-hmm. puts, you know, like a solid circle in their name
mm-hmm.
and like starts posing as somebody
mm-hmm.
That people believe for a little bit before they realize, like, wait, there's no check mark here. This isn't them.
Mm-hmm.
Which happened because the St. Louis Cardinals manager back in 2009, Tony La Russa, sued them because mm-hmm. somebody was impersonating him, making false statements and all that.
Yeah.
And sort of as a part of that, they said, like, hey, we should actually verify these people,
mm-hmm.
These celebrities, athletes, government officials,
mm-hmm.
Companies, all that kind of stuff. So that people can kind of have a better experience knowing, you know, who is the real person and who's impersonating them.
Mm-hmm.
But now they want to charge $8 for Twitter Blue, mm-hmm. which, you know, get you things like the ability to edit tweets after you post them. Mm-hmm. But then, like, the latest things he said about, like, what that gets you is, like, oh, you only see, like, half the ads.
Mm-hmm.
There's a video that came out earlier today of him talking at some events about, like, how, you know, they are paying so that their stuff gets, you know, first priority in the comment sections of posts.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't have it, the algorithm is just going to spit you out somewhere in the back. Mm-hmm. Somewhere. You know, as much as he was trying to say, like, oh, this is going to get rid of the lords and peasants system. It's like, no, you just created a different one.
Mm-hmm.
Where people with enough money, and it's like the potential for, you know, corporations to get all their employees check marks.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're important, even if they're not noteworthy.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe Russia says, like, hey, we got money.
Mm-hmm.
We can pay for a bunch of these and then spread all the disinformation we want.
Because mm-hmm.
this guy clearly doesn't give a shit about democracy or anything.
Mm-hmm.
He's a capitalist asshole that just wants to make money.
Yeah. And, well, some other things that he's been worrying about is blaming activists for advertisers leaving the platform. No, I think they started leaving the platform because you decided to buy it, Elon, and they decided to cut their losses while they could.
Yeah, you bought it and you brought chaos to the platform.
Mm-hmm.
Fired a bunch of people so that, say, the people that help moderate content,
mm-hmm.
Despite claiming that there's been no change, it's like, you clearly cannot do the same amount of content moderation with half the people.
Mm.
That's not going to work that way. He said, Twitter has had a massive drop in revenue due to activist groups pressuring advertisers. Mm-hmm. You know, nothing has changed with content moderation. We did everything we could to appease the activists.
Mm.
Extremely messed up. They're trying to destroy free speech in America. It's like, this isn't free speech.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, a bunch of people, celebrities with blue check marks, decided to change their name to Elon Musk and mock him.
Mm-hmm.
Constantly, and guess what? Many of them have been banned.
Yep.
Or had their temporary suspension kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Because apparently free speech is not allowed.
Mm-hmm.
Because, especially if you're mocking the person that paid $44 billion for this company and this platform,
mm-hmm.
all he's getting out of it is relentless satire and mocking
mm-hmm.
of his stupid self.
Yeah.
It has managed to alienate lots of brands in that process, especially as he's talking a lot with right-wingers on Twitter
mm-hmm.
And saying, like, yeah, we're gonna do everything we can to help you guys out.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, yeah, they don't like that. They mm-hmm. don't want their stuff associated with the far right, with racism, anti-Semitism, transphobia, all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
No advertiser wants that. That's why YouTube's been having trouble for years as they try to deal with all the shitty content that appears on their platform. That is almost too much for them to handle. Google can't hire enough people to keep the awful shit off of YouTube. What does Twitter have?
Mm-hmm.
A chance of doing that. So, yeah, there you go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, and I just looked at Twitter, right? Just people who were just straight up pretending to be other people. It's amazing. To top it all off, he's already laid off half of the people in the company. Like, I mean, he said already that he was going to fire like 75% or something, and he's well on his way to it. He's literally chopped their workforce in half.
Yeah, and sort of in the process of that, since many of them are in California,
mm-hmm.
where they have a law called the WARN Act
mm-hmm.
that requires companies to give them a 30 or 60 day notice
mm-hmm.
When layoffs are planned. And he obviously did it mm-hmm. last minute, essentially. So there's a class action lawsuit being filed for mm-hmm. that. And yeah, that's going to be fun times for him.
Mm-hmm.
As well as people around the world that they have employed. And I suppose he's trying to get rid of allowing people to work from home.
Because
mm-hmm. what do rich people love more than having people come into a building that they're paying rent for and all that?
Mm-hmm.
So they can be constantly monitored as they work.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of people found out because they like lost their privileges to get on the internal work site and the Slacks and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, yeah, that sounds like what he would do.
Yep.
I mean, I gutted a lot of internal teams, especially those involved in moderation and
mm-hmm.
All that kind of stuff. So,
yep.
Yeah, it's going to cause a lot of chaos. And it's like, why would advertisers want to be a part of this?
Mm-hmm.
Especially when some of them are competitors to Tesla, like Audi and GM.
Yeah.
And they're not leftists, they're capitalists.
Yeah.
They see opportunities, they'll partner with Trump.
Mm-hmm.
They saw opportunities to partner with Biden.
And have. On both ends, yes.
Because that helps them out.
Mm-hmm. But, yeah, so that's been the story of Twitter this week and just the absolute shit show that it's become. But moving on from there, we have this story about CVS and Walgreens. They recently announced a settlement based around all the opioids they helped shovel out, totaling about $10 billion in total.
Yeah, I think about $5 billion each.
Mm-hmm.
I think Walmart also settled, but I don't know what their, mm-hmm. their details were. But those got announced here as they're settling lawsuits nationwide over the toll of opioids.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Walmart's in discussion for a deal.
Mm-hmm.
The final details on that stuff. So yeah, that's great news for the people in the communities that have been
mm-hmm.
wronged by this unfortunate pushing of incredibly strong drugs.
Yeah.
That has ruined lives, ended lives, and destroyed families and communities.
Mm-hmm. But unlike what didn't happen this week involving opioids. So like I said at the top of the show, there every year, every Halloween comes along, we see the same story, people about worrying about putting things in the candy and then putting them out to kids. Well, this year, there was this absolutely bizarre conspiracy theory that there was this just tons of this rainbow fentanyl that was coming over the border into the U.S., and that people were going to shovel it out to kids during Halloween and kill all these kids. Yeah, it turns out that it was all bullshit.
Yeah, that was very much Fox News's big story for the past few months.
Mm-hmm.
Since the DEA in August alerted the public to the existence of this bright-colored fentanyl pills
mm-hmm.
that resembled candy, as they called rainbow fentanyl.
Yeah.
They warned that the pills were a deliberate scheme by drug cartels to sell addictive fentanyl to children and young people. And it's like, how would they buy it?
Yeah.
Their parents would obviously find out about this and mm-hmm. they'd be like, well, I gotta keep Johnny's habit going.
Mm.
And also no drug cartels can give out free drugs in the amounts that they were alleging here. And supposedly they would somehow get it into real bags of candy and get that into retailers so that people wouldn't know and all this. And it's like, yeah, none of this makes any sense on a logistical scale. And conveniently, it ended up not being an issue. Like, the only time there's, like, drugs that are given out is either through people that are trying to prove that it's real, and they do it themselves. Or it's, like, some druggie, like, accidentally gives out something they don't intend to, like, completely outing themselves, but I don't even think that's very common either. Like, none of that really happens in any way, shape, or form. That's, like, been three times, and it's always been the fault of the person that gave out the candy. They intentionally did it to prove something that doesn't really exist.
It
seems to conveniently line up with the midterm elections.
Which, reminder, 4 days. You know what to do. But, yeah.
Then get your drugs.
In fact, we're probably going to need a whole lot of drugs just to get through the friggin' day. Which, by the way, just as an aside, this is just my recommendation, but no matter who you end up, after you're done, just shut the TV off for the rest of the day. You know, disconnect from social media. Just, you know, binge Netflix or something that day. Trust me, the stress is just not worth it. But anyway, now we're very much into the sort of non serious part of the show. And it's very much because of where it comes from. And it's kind of related to us, especially because it's video game related. Ross Chastain, who is a driver in NASCAR, actually managed to pull off this wild move at the end of a race that he actually learned in an old GameCube game.
The NASCAR 2005 game, he called it. Basically, what it is in like the final turn of the final lap of this, I forget where it's at, which track, but it was to get into the championship race. And he knew that he needed to get a few more spots ahead to qualify. So he basically, you know, put the pedal to the metal and just rode the wall all the way to the end. Blazing past a bunch of drivers, bumping into one right at the end as he kind of got to the limits of what this move could do. Luckily, didn't get to any sort of worst case scenario for this, because it could have easily gone bad if this wasn't a smooth enough wall, sort of curve. Could have just planted himself into the wall and caused a wreck. There's even a video of the dash cam where literally the camera is unable to keep up with what happened at times, as it's so much going on, and destroyed the car basically in the process. Went from 10th to 5th place, a little move to the next stage of the championship. And yeah, even had the best time, lap time in the whole race. So, you know, just wild stuff. There's also a video of the other drivers reacting to this, getting the radio reactions. A lot of them are like, wow, somebody actually did that. Basically being amazed by it, you know, the balls of pulling that kind of move off. And I guess some drivers like calling for an outlawing of that move in the future. Because it is dangerous.
Oh, it is hella dangerous.
He basically destroyed the entire side of his car.
Yeah.
In the process, and was like, yeah, I tried this out when I was a kid in NASCAR 2005, and I guess it works. And yeah, luckily. But yeah, this is definitely a move that people that play racing games try all the time. Because usually you're not going to feel the effects the way that a real car does in this. So yeah, that's a, that's a fun thing to happen. one of the wildest good things to happen in a NASCAR race.
Yep.
Usually it's always tragedy.
Yeah. Something horrible. Or somebody says something stupid. But yeah. So that's probably going to become an very soon. So enjoy it while you can. Now we're moving on to the entertainment portion of the show. The first story being Taylor Swift is the first artist in history to sweep the entire top 10 of Billboard's Hot 100 list.
And she had her new album come out, Midnights.
Yep.
Released the same day as Carly Rae Jepsen's album, which I don't think was on all that high.
That's yeah.
Her whole thing, she comes under the radar a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But Taylor Swift was a big deal.
Uh-huh.
And yeah, had 10 of her tracks in the top 10.
Mm-hmm.
For that, yeah. Surpassed Drake's feat last year, which he captured 9 of them.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's good for her, especially because she's sort of broken away from the producer that basically stole a bunch of her music.
Mm-hmm.
And she's been sort of working towards remaking a lot of it so that she could have control over it. So yeah, there you go.
Yeah. Yep. Impressive. And now we got an unfortunate cancellation. Westworld has officially been canceled by HBO after the end of its 4th season.
Yeah, I don't know if it's unfortunate. This seems like a show that has written itself into a corner, essentially.
Uh-huh.
Because it's a show that requires you to have seen every single episode previous.
Yeah, that's true.
Usually not too big of an issue. The wild swings in quality, especially after the great first season.
Mm-hmm.
Where you get to the second season, you're like, what the hell is going on? There's like nothing happening.
Mm.
Just kind of some expected reaction from what happened at the end of the first season.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, this is pretty boring for what's supposedly happening.
Mm-hmm.
It takes a while for them to get back to like the good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, they had a bunch of people leave throughout the 4 seasons. But I imagine this is one of those shows where the audience just shrinks with each season, where they come to the 4th season, it's probably not great at all.
Mm-hmm.
Not what it once was. Especially when you got stuff like House of the Dragon happening, and I don't think I have it here, but they got Last of Us coming out in January, as they announced the other day. So they had some big stuff that is probably going to be able to hold people's attention more than Westworld has, unfortunately. But it happens. They got 4 seasons out of that, where the original was a movie that people forgot about off and on.
Yeah, it's kind of a cult classic.
Yeah.
By that I mean, it's a movie that people forgot about off and on.
People that see it kind of don't forget about it.
Yeah.
Though being who was involved in that, went on to make bigger stuff.
Yeah. A little thing called Jurassic Park.
Yeah, that's been dragging on for 20 years, 30 years at this point.
Yeah. But we do have the good news from Netflix, which is honestly a change of pace. Netflix officially renewed The Sandman for season 2, which is good because the first season of Sandman was really, really awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. They're calling the new season a continuation of The Sandman's world.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe following some more stuff from the comics as well as doing other things.
Mm-hmm.
So that's good.
Yeah.
The more that's the very specific style of things going on.
Yeah. And of course, Neil Gaiman is heavily involved in it. So it's not one of those things where you can say, you know, they make changes and he approves all of them, which is hilarious because if you remember when that season first debuted and suddenly they had all these people. You know, it's like, oh, the Sandman has gone woke. I'm like, the Sandman was probably the wokest comic of the 90s.
Yeah.
Period.
Unlike, what's his name? The Watchmen creator.
Yeah. Alan Moore.
Yeah. Who's like, I don't want anything to do with any of this shit.
Yeah.
it's been perverted too much. So it's like, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. A lot of that has to do with just sort of the rather bad relationship he has with DC. Because DC is basically owns the copyright, the Watchmen, and he's sick of having to deal with them. And it's like, if you sort of research sort of the background of that comic, you kind of sort of realize it was sort of a copyright minefield from the beginning, because all those characters that are in that book are basically sort of vague XBs of like a bunch of heroes, a bunch of comic characters that DC kind of got after they bought this other company. So like, for example, Rorschach is basically a XB of this character called The Question. Night Owl is sort of an XB of the Blue Beetle. You know, stuff like that.
Yeah, but that seemed like the entire point of that comic was like, yeah, there's all these longtime superheroes and they're just as corrupt as everybody else.
Yeah, well, not all of them are. Some of them are just fine. But the thing about Watchmen is, when you talk about the ones that are bad, most of them are okay, but there are a bunch of them that are like genuinely awful people, like the comedian. It was a genuinely awful person. Then he had guys like Dr. Manhattan, who, because of his, powers, he just grew increasingly more and more detached from humanity. But guys like Night Owl and the Silk Spectre were actually all right.
Yeah.
Mostly it's just the fact showing it's like, these guys, the sort of major, like, sort of punch to the gut that comic did was that it basically showed a side of superheroes that didn't exist in American comics at that point.
Yeah. It was a commentary on superheroes and comics and all that.
Yeah. And a bunch of other stuff too. That comic has so many layers to it. It's insane. Especially when you go back and read it after finishing it, and all of the shit that comic was trying to communicate to you from the beginning, but you didn't catch it until later. Yeah. Pretty amazing stuff. But, moving on, we got some trailers to talk about, and probably one of the big trailers this week is we got the official trailer for Avatar: The Way of Water. And,
finally another trailer, so I don't have to see the other one 50,000 times.
Yeah, this one's more full length and actually makes more sense and seems to actually mention what the actual plot is, and it looks amazing. I'm sorry, it does. It looks amazing. It may not have an amazing plot, but God, that art direction is just insane.
Yeah, it looks really nice. But I just hate this movie now because I've seen that trailer at the front of every movie I saw this year.
Yeah.
It drove me nuts at a certain point.
So, here's a question. Is this going to be the first James Cameron movie that's in the box office, or is he going to prove everyone wrong yet again? Because James Cameron has this reputation in the world of constantly going over budget, and the studios are like, this is going to be the one that bombs and bankrupts us, and yet it ends up making absolute bank.
I think it'll bomb. I think it'll probably at least do fine relative to the budget.
Yeah, because you got to remember, he made like three of these movies at the same time, which is why we're finally getting them all these years later. Remember, Obama was in office when the first movie came out.
3D TVs were a thing when that came out.
Yeah, and that
was the whole point.
Yeah.
I want to see 3D. Here's a movie made just for that.
Yeah.
And like the idea of watching without that seems like not the point of it at all. But yeah, this one, it looks neat.
Yeah.
I actually understand the plot other than just these people swim a lot.
Yeah.
That's what the previous trailer was like. Oh, they like the water. Okay, that's cool.
Yeah.
They seem like aquatic people for the most part.
Yeah.
And this one's pregnant, so that's cool.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, there's a whole family. They're fighting for family and their people. And the humans seem to be bad people again.
Yeah, they seem to be branching out sort of the overall sort of lore of Pandora itself. We're getting more of the various distinctions of the Na'vi as a group. In fact, it looks like the Na'vi themselves are going to be the main focus this time, with very little actual human stuff involved.
Yeah, maybe. Who knows?
Maybe. Also found out that the movie's going to be over 3 hours long. So...
Yeah, he filmed 3 movies. There's probably a lot of content there.
Yeah. God, it's just... Part of me really wants this movie to succeed because, for all, you know, in spite of all the flaws, I did really like the first movie, and I do really like this universe that he's created, and I want to see more content from it. But just the unbelievable amount of cash that he sunk into this project.
Yeah.
And, I mean, keep in mind, Avatar ended up the top grossing picture of all time, you know, until Avengers Endgame ate its lunch, but...
Yeah, though I think Avatar got released again. I don't know if it made any significant money out of that. I don't know, but...
The thing, yeah, I'm just like...
Then you realize that's all Disney, so who cares?
Yeah, that's the other thing. It's like, yeah, they could make up lose money on all of it, and it wouldn't make a dent.
Because it's all... They're all the same company overall.
Yeah, pretty much.
It's like wondering which of their brands is better. It's like, who cares? It's all the same shit.
Yeah. But
so yeah, that'll be out December 16th, I think it said.
Mm-hmm.
So Ariel, you can watch it right before Christmas and get depressed that you still don't live in their world.
Yeah. That actually happened, right? There was like a...
Yeah, there's a lot of people that got depressed.
You got super depressed because it's like, you know, that world looks so beautiful compared to the, you know, that hellhole that we currently live in.
Yeah, it's like, no, that's just your current surroundings.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's no, like, weird place. Like, there's one part in this trailer that's like, there's this whole weird, like, thing going on that's, like, very sci-fi.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like some big thing way in the past, like, shot and destroyed this planet or something, or crashed into this planet.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of thing. It's like, yeah, who knows?
Yep.
Maybe they'll get to that in one of the other movies.
Mm-hmm. Or like one of the games or whatever, because there's got to be a game.
So amazing we're almost at the release of one of those movies.
Yeah.
Considering how long they got delayed.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's also kind of a Cameron staple. Well, he's kind of a hardcore perfectionist. Almost.
Yeah, but they don't usually announce, like, we're working on 3 movies.
Yeah.
And they're going to be out in, like, 3 years, and then get slated for 5 years beyond that.
Yep.
Like, this is never going to happen.
Mm-hmm. And yet, here it is. It's happening.
Yeah.
Moving on from there, we also got an official trailer for HBO Max's A Christmas Story Christmas. Yes, you heard me right. I didn't stroke out there. A Christmas Story Christmas. It is another sequel to A Christmas Story.
Yep, they got most of the people back.
Yep.
Even the weird bully kid.
Somehow.
Yeah, it seems like he comes back to the old stomping grounds with his family and all that.
Mm-hmm.
And they have their own Christmas and all that. As he deals with all of his old friends and enemies and such.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that'll be on HBO Max November 17th.
Mm-hmm.
So here you go, you can check it out.
And finally, last but not least, we got an official trailer for Netflix's Troll.
Yeah, and this looks pretty neat. It's one of their sort of international movies. It's mm-hmm. based in Norway.
Mm-hmm.
As there's like a big explosion in the Norwegian mountains that awakens an ancient troll that just decides to fuck shit up.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's kind of a Norwegian folklore kaiju movie.
Yeah, pretty much. I also love somebody here in the comments. Actually worth repeating. I love how, because of Netflix, it's now normal to love international shows and language is no longer a barrier.
Good subtitling support does a great job.
Yeah, and it tends to do simulcasting as well.
Yeah. The director for this did another like popular, I don't know if it was a Netflix funded thing, The Wave, which is sort of like a disaster thing about this big wave that was starting to destroy. Maybe it was Norway, something like that. That whole thing, like a disaster movie kind of thing.
Yeah.
I was thought about watching it, but hadn't gotten around to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He also did the most recent Tomb Raider reboot movie.
Mm-hmm.
Since around the Tomb Raider reboot games.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go. Somebody with some chops there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And when is that out? That is out December 1st. So
yep.
Next month.
Yep. Early next month. But yeah, that's going to be it for us tonight, I think. So I would like to remind all of our listeners, if you got a question, comment, or something you want us to read on the air, you can get in touch with us at letsweekenders@gmail.com. That's letsweekenders@gmail.com. We got a link for it in the show notes. Also, on top of Apple Podcasts, we got our little bit of Unscripted Shenanigans. You can also find at Google Play, RSS, archive.com, or, well, actually archive.org, rather, and pretty much any kind of podcast aggregator you can think of. So we're going to go ahead and wrap it up there. Repeating one more time, Tuesday is the midterms. If you have not voted in the United States, please do so, because these midterms are kind of important. there are a bunch of lunatics who are trying to get into positions of power, and this is like the only way we can stop them before, you know, we have to turn to the other way that isn't going to be terribly pleasant.
Basically, every election from now on is going to be the most important election of your life.
Unfortunately. Ugh. Because both sides, both parties are going to be constantly jerking us around.
And the media will do whatever they can to ruin things.
Yeah. Including, apparently, trying to give the election over to the Republicans, because have you noticed how many of those bullshit polls they've been pushing in our faces over the last couple weeks?
Like, the red wave is real.
Yeah.
Democrats have no chance.
Yeah.
Oh, but, I didn't know the election happened already.
Well, anyway. We're going to go ahead and end it there. Join us tomorrow. I mean, not tomorrow, but next week when we will hopefully have the results for all those elections. And we'll be able to tell you about either the after party or the aftermath, which either way it goes. Yeah, join us next week for more unscripted lunacy and all that crap. And yeah, hopefully we'll still be a country by then. Good night, everybody.